Pubcast.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
So what we do is we'll care for people who are dying, but we'll also help build a community around the person who is dying. And so it helps to ease the transition because it's a time when there's a lot of confusion, emotions are running high. People are not familiar these days with how to care for somebody who's dying because it's a practice that's largely been removed from our homes, and we're not necessarily engaged in nursing homes and residential care.
Welcome to the Liberated Healer Podcast, where we touch on a variety of topics in the world of spirituality, energetic healing, and everything in between and beyond. Take an adventure on a shooting star with your hosts, Gina and Linnea, offering their wisdom, guidance, and everlasting love and support.
Hi, everybody. Liberated Healer Podcast. If you hear a little bit of rain in the background, we're having some rain in Southern California, so I hope that doesn't distract you. We are going to be talking a little bit about death today because we have a death doula on. This is her book. So if that's something that, triggers you or anything that you don't want to hear about today, please click off and find something that you're in the mood for. But it's going to be really interesting. And so we're going to welcome Anne-Marie Keppel. Hello.
Hello, Gina.
Hello. So death doula is something that people are really talking about, you know, currently. It's, you know, more often. And so I really found that it was interesting. I wanted to hear about how, what that is and how people use it and what the experience is like and kind of get into it. And this is actually your book, which we'll link in the bio for everybody. But yeah, let us know who you are and how you got into this practice.
Yeah, thank you. So my name is Anne-Marie. I hail from the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont. And I started doing this work probably about, 12 years ago now. And it really is just something that keeps unfolding as I keep going along with it. And, I'm realizing now that the more that I work with the dying, it's really about working with the living. and they're just completely intermeshed. And so we can go into that. But what is a death doula? So a common phrase that's used is it's a non-medical holistic caregiver. And so what we do is we'll care for people who are dying, but we'll also help build a community around the person who is dying. And so it helps to ease the transition because it's a time when there's a lot of confusion, emotions are running high. People are not familiar these days with how to care for somebody who's dying because it's a practice that's largely been removed from our homes, and we're not necessarily engaged in nursing homes and residential care. So bringing in somebody who has been trained as a death doula or who has gone through this process themselves just organically over the years, that absolutely can be a death doula also, can be really helpful, really beneficial to help ground some of what's going on.
Absolutely. And a family might start to say, you know, we think this is happening to our family member. You know, you never know when it's going to happen though, right? So you kind of have to have, the timing is really, something. So you, I guess you're kind of on call when you've got these clients and you kind of, or, you know, I don't know. Is that correct?
Yeah, it can be tricky. So people reach out for me for different reasons. They'll reach out in advance because either they have received a diagnosis and they're thinking about their future death, or they'll reach out because they have a family member who is dying and they want to try and understand how to be of benefit to them and what kinds of paperwork they should have in order. There's really a lot, and it can be completely overwhelming. But as far as what it is that I do, I could end up meeting with somebody once and give them all the information that they need at that time, or I can end up staying with them time and time again throughout the bedside, sitting vigil and offering respite. So it's really just, it depends on the situation, which is part of what makes this work so difficult. So being a death doula, there is no umbrella like there is hospice. So hospice has a never-ending chain of people that will come in and assist the people who are dying. And it's an organization. They have structure. They have resources. Death doulas are really individuals doing this work. And so unless there is a collaboration of sorts where you've put together a little network of doulas, people are really on their own, which makes it difficult for this to be an actual profession, to be a job. Because as you said, a lot of it is you simply have to be on call. It's unpredictable work.
And hospice is paid by the government, which is a great program. And we're so grateful that, you know, it's gotten enacted and approved and everything. But it is kind of more government work. It is a little, and the people that do it are amazing, but they're on call and they have a lot of clients and it's a little bit different. So what you are able to provide is really a deeper one-on-one that's committed to their wishes and how, you know, and helping, you know, sometimes I assume that like the whole family will want to be there and they're going through things and they need a little bit of help with the process.
When there are lots of people that want to help, and really what I do is I build communities around the individual who's dying, because things can change overnight and all of a sudden, like, all of the routines that you had in place now are completely out the window, and now there's a whole new protocol and the people need to be retrained. And so I always look to build a community of people that have diverse skills, so that if somebody is good at physical care, then they can offer that. Somebody else is good at just giving a massage. Somebody else is good at scheduling things. And it really does take this team of people to care for the one who's dying. And it feels good a lot of times to have a job, to have something to do. And when you have that many people supporting the one who's dying, then not one person gets completely overwhelmed. And I mean, that's the idea. There's always going to be those, you know, that one or two people who are really there, like the core care provider, the core, like the heart mate of the person that is dying, whether it's a friend or spouse. But they can't do it all themselves. And oftentimes they want to be there. They want to, like, all of a sudden be able to be awake all hours of the night and do all of the caregiving, but it's not possible without completely burning out, and then you're not benefiting anyone.
Yeah. This is really beautiful, because this is a tradition that obviously used to be enacted, you know, hundreds of years ago. When we didn't live as long, we had communities. Everybody had a role in the community. You know, this is way, you know, when I'm thinking maybe way before technology or even cars or whatever, like, when someone would pass, the whole little tribe would come and we would break up into do little things. So it's basic. And then as we got more modern, we got more separate. And so what I like this idea is, it's almost like bringing back our humanity, our old traditions, you know what I mean? And it's really necessary. And you're sort of like a guide.
Yeah. Yes. Hopefully what I'm doing is helping to reawaken that in people, because so many people have these innate abilities to care for the dying, but they think that it's reserved for those that have had very specific training, and they have this incredible patience, and they have this, it's just very ordinary. So part of what I try to tell people is that this is very ordinary work. It's sacred ordinary, but it's very ordinary work. And I see some of the, just some newer trainings or some people out there that kind of glamorize death care, and they're making it look like amazing, like something that you want to do, you want to get into that thing, but it's really just very ordinary, and it's messy, and there are smells, and there are emotions that are really difficult to navigate. And so I try to downplay the hype and say, actually, anybody can do this work, and it doesn't make you angelic. So that's something that sometimes people will say to me. They're like, oh, that's so beautiful. You're an angel. I'm like, thank you. I'm just a human.
So let's talk a little bit what's in your book. What about the what the physical body does during the dying process? Can you add a little bit just to give people some context to that?
Yeah, there are certain things that the body starts to go through as it is transitioning, the spirit or the energy that is coming out of the body. And it doesn't matter what culture you are from, there are different beliefs attached to what is happening, but there are some just very physical things that are happening that just happen to humans across the board. So your breathing becomes irregular, your heart rate will become irregular. And some of these things, if there's like a sound, like a wheezing, a rattling in the chest, it can be really alarming if you don't know that that's normal.
Okay.
And so part of what's in the book is just saying very clearly what some of these different things are, so that when it comes up, you can have some kind of a reference point, like, oh, okay, I read about this. But as I was saying before, we're so separated from that everything feels scary.
Yeah. And when you sit down with a family, you can talk about options, right? Like, maybe interjecting like psychedelics or virtual reality, or what kind of mental soothing that person wants. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, ideally, these are things that people would think about before they're actively dying. So that with the emotional bandwidth to explore what some of the possibilities are, then you're able to implement some of these different things into your dying process that will feel soothing to you. Yeah. But if you're not looking at what the options are and different ways of dying, then it can be very difficult when your dying is brought right in front of you. And then, learning something new just feels completely overwhelming. Some people will decide that they want to try psychedelics. And I'm always a little bit cautious about that. I'm all for it. However, if you've never done psychedelics in your life, I'm not sure that that's the best time when you're 80 years old and yeah, have received a diagnosis. So I always try and steer people back. I'm like, okay, what are the reasons that you would want to be doing this? And their reasons are they want something more. They want to know more. They want to expand. They want to understand. And they already feel so ungrounded anyway that they kind of will just grasp at things in a way that's not necessarily concentrated. But there's always microdosing. I say, why don't you try microdosing?
why is talking about death so uncomfortable? It's really interesting because I'm pretty comfortable with it, but I'm already getting an energetic feeling, and I'm trying to, you know, because I'm empath and stuff, just about people hearing about this, talking about it. But there is definitely like an energy as soon as you start talking about it. You know, what do you say to that? I mean, you remain calm and you're in this every day. So why is it so uncomfortable, I guess, just to even to have the conversation?
Well, I think it's probably because it is the biggest mystery in, in human awareness. Like, where are we going? Why are we here? What are we doing? And we're really not good with not knowing things. We want to know dates, times, places, what to expect. We want to prepare ourselves mentally, get ourselves in order so that we can work with it. And death holds none of those things. And all of the comforts that we have built around us, that we've worked really hard to like maintain comfort and maintain things that, you know, if they change, they're not going to throw us into, you know, oblivion. And there's none of that. There are none of the comforts that we can associate with when we think of death.
Yeah. And since you've seen a lot of people pass, I'm sure you get this question a lot. You know, I've talked to hospice nurses as well. And when that last breath sort of comes out of the body and the body becomes animated in a way, have you experienced any type of seeing anything coming out of the body or guides coming in or anything or a shift in the energy that felt celestial or anything like that?
Yeah. I've never seen anything. But there, I've felt it, and I've felt it both with my hands. So, with my father-in-law, when he was dying, I was raking the crown of his head and his heart chakra. And, it felt like an upward rushing waterfall on the top of my head. And I had my eyes closed, but I kept opening my eyes to look at him because I was like, like, what is this? So I could physically feel that one. But other times there is, I kind of explained it. So this is an Alex Gray.
Yeah. I love Alex Gray
here behind me. And if you look at some of his work, there would be eyes all over the place, just covered with all of these eyeballs. And I feel that, not every time, but I feel that in the room when people have just died. It's kind of like, it's almost like, you know, in the movies, it would go, you know, like make that big sound. And it feels like an opening, like a vortex opening. And all of a sudden, there's just the feeling of being watched. And that's very real.
Wow. When you said the waterfall, I think that's really interesting because when my brother passed away, he was in the hospital and he was only 29, but my mom had an experience. And I think mothers and children are, you know, they're all eternally attached. And she woke up and had a full vision of the roof coming off of her home and flooding with almost a giant wave. And she could see him sort of in the wave and then sort of like the soul go up, and then she got the call that he passed. So, but when you said the waterfall, it was exactly like that feeling that, you know what I mean? Just, it was a whoosh of water. So I don't know, you know, it must be different, but wow, that is so interesting. Yeah. So you kind of feels like that whoosh and some things in the room, and you know, that's really, really sweet. And then what about after the last breath? Like, what are some of the things that you do to help people along?
Oh, it's really hard. And for everybody, it's so different. So grief is something that our society really wants nothing to do with. It's slow, it's messy. Nobody is, you know, being productive. Everything comes to a standstill. And that's just not how we operate here, for better or worse, actually for worse. Yeah. And so there are so many different ways that people can grieve and work with the process of grieving. But even that has to be learned, because we don't have a lot of healthy models for showing us the different ways that grieving can happen and expression. And it can be art, it can be dance, it can be walking, it can be sitting in your car screaming, it can be sticking your hands in the soil, it can be punching something. And you know, people will think that, you know, I shouldn't be angry because, or I should be this way, I should be that way, but it's kind of everything. It's whatever it is that's coming up at the time, and just allowing a kind of softness and a space for yourself that's okay, and that people around you are like, oh, okay, you're crying right now, that's okay. So often people will see somebody who's crying and they want to fix it. They want them to stop crying, to cheer up. It's okay. It'll get better with time. It'll, because really we're uncomfortable with them crying.
For grief, I've done a lot of work on grief. And what helped me, and that's why you have this channel, is because information helps me heal. You know, knowledge and education of the things going on with me. And that's why I want to share, or, you know, but what I found really helpful with grief is understanding there are stages. You know, the first shocking moment, like that's a stage, you know, and then you go through a withdrawal moment because you're not, like, you want to call them, you're used to sleeping next to them or whatever. And that's like that withdrawal symptoms. And then you kind of go it. So there's different books and healers and teachers that will help you through grieving the stages. For me, that was really good to understand what stage I was in.
Totally.
And that's because it feels so like it's taken from you. And then, you know, you're like, okay, maybe I can get to the next stage. You're like, okay, I'm in the withdrawal stage. Okay, I'm in the,
Stages you're referring to, they're not Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. So this is a different thing that you're talking about. It sounds like healthy.
Yeah, it's Susan Anderson. I've had her on my podcast a couple of times, but she has the journey of abandonment and grief. And I use that. And, you know, like you said, you're doing an audio version of your book, which is great, right? She has an audio version. And when I was actively in a anxiety-driven, grief-stricken time, I would just put it on my car. And then it just calm me down and be like, okay, yep, I can get to that next stage. I'm in this stage. It's okay. It's normal. It normalizes what you're feeling.
Totally.
Because, you know, a lot of times when you're feeling a lot of emotions, you feel like you're the only one feeling it for some reason, or the
Yeah. You feel like everybody's looking at you. And they're like, and you start thinking like, well, can they tell that I'm grieving? And that there's like, at least with me, there's like, it's like almost paranoia, because you're hyper aware of your feelings and then hyper aware of others looking at you in your confusion. And it's really hard.
And you're the second person recently that talked about Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. She wrote that a while ago, and she's passed on since now. So, you know, is that your experience, that things have kind of like evolved a little bit from what her earlier teaching was?
Well, yeah, she did a beautiful job, and there, I have great respect for her and her work. It's wonderful. It's just that people tended to get stuck in what the stages are, and that, and really, it's not like a circle, and it's not X, Y, and Z. And it's not that you jump back and forth. It's like this whole tangled mess. But I also hear what you're saying, that having something to reference that normalizes it is crucial. So any updated version, like I'm always looking for new tools to help people, because it's different things vibe with different people, different ways, and whatever works for you.
Absolutely. Look up Susan Anderson. She's got all kinds of books. She's really well known and very kind and gentle. And I just love the way that she presents things. And the audio version just helped me greatly, you know. So I would recommend that to anybody, that if you're looking for another source for people, because they need it. And it's, you know, I would have a list. I like to have a list. In my book, you know, there's all, it's in all my resources are in there about these things. So Well, is there anything you'd like to take us out with today? A little bit of more additional information that we didn't cover that you think would be important for people to know about this process?
Yeah, I think just for people to understand, it seems completely contrary, but that by studying death and dying, you end up feeling more alive. You end up appreciating the living so much more. And it seems wrong, and it seems scary, and it seems like it's taboo and you should leave it alone and don't go there. But for most people, it feels incredibly liberating. The show is Liberated Healer. It feels freeing. And, you know, you might get to places where you feel like a little scared or a little stuck. That's okay. You'll move through it. Just allow space to move through it. And when you work in conversations about death and dying into your regular daily activities, and you can laugh about it and have a sense of humor, it's, you start to get a vocabulary and an okayness with it. And so then when it does happen, at least you have a vocabulary. It doesn't mean it's going to soften it necessarily, but it means that you've already been talking about it. So it can free you up in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your work. This is Death Nesting, the Heart-Centered Practices of a Death Doula, and audio version coming out. If you guys are going through anything like this, this would be really helpful. There's a lot of information in here to help you get along with the situation that you're going through. Thank you so much for your contribution and doing the work that you do, and for supporting those going through such we're all going to go through it at one point, you know, having a little helping hand and making it gracious and respectful and making it a little bit easier, actually a little bit of beautiful, you know, exiting in a way that's, kind. And I appreciate that so much. And I appreciate your time today. We're going to link everything in the bio so you can find her book and find more about her. And that's it. Thank you so much, you guys. Until next time.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can find us online at theliberatedhealer.com, on Instagram at Liberated Healer Podcast, or on Facebook at The Liberated Healer. Give us a follow, subscribe, send us a message if you so feel, and thank you for your support.
Podcast.